You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
They'll have an extremely difficult time of intercepting. You know, when it comes to the internet, you know, cell phones, etc., because they're a lot of the cell phone towers can be could be compromised, and then the communication will be extremely difficult. The other thing, of course, is that Poland has agreed to form or give us a free pass, a corridor. So that corridor will run through Germany, through Poland, and into Ukraine. I'm sure, as you've seen, the airfields have been bombarded. You know, planes difficult to land with supplies, but they are going to be able to land in Poland and then be convoyed, truck convoyed, you know, into Ukraine. So I think that the lines of communication will be open. They may be in some respect compromised. They may be lessened, but we'll still have the ability, I believe, to communicate effectively with our brethren.
Right, right. And that's, I think that's going to be one of those things where, you know, it's blacking out the internet means blacking out information. And right. And that is something that I think is going to be, you know, deeply concerning, you know, in this, especially if, you know, things start to go south. But I want to pivot real quick, because as you mentioned before, at the beginning of this interview, right now, Ukraine and Russia are literally on the Belarus border having talks. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think, you know, is going to be the end result of that? Do you think that President Zelensky and the Ukrainian government can take Putin or the Putin government at their word in this situation, just given everything that's going on?
Well, from everything that I saw and read, it did look like the talks were going to progress at any type of a and come up with a resolution that was going to be acceptable to both parties. Putin stated categorically he wants the Ukrainian military to lay down their arms. He wants regime change. You know, if the talks, if they come in and the Russian side says, no, we're only going to accept capitulation, a demilitarization, the Ukrainian government will never agree to that, you know, because they know they are facing almost certain death. You know, can he be trusted at his word? He's never been trusted at his word. You know, when he runs into opposition, which the Ukrainian army is providing at this time, his fury grows even greater. We've seen this in when he leveled Grozny. We've seen this in Syria, where their forces just absolutely annihilated Aleppo. Can he be trusted? Absolutely not. You know, and his whole cadre, whether it's Lavrov, Dmitry Medvedev, none of them are trusted. You know, they all take commands from him. And the man has basically become a delusional psychotic, you know, and you know, his intent is to destroy Ukraine. He thinks that he will be able to recreate some semblance of not the Soviet Union, but the Russian Empire. And he's being stymied. And the whole world is turning Russia into a pariah state. So do I have expectations that those peace talks will yield any type of results? Quite honestly, no.
Okay. All right. And I mean, that's fair, just given the situation, you know, and obviously what looks like the end goal for the Russian government and Vladimir Putin here, which I think, as you say, you know, is conquest of Ukraine. And by virtue of that, if Kyiv unfortunately falls, and I know that the Ukrainian Defense Forces have been just dug in and fiercely fighting. I mean, I think the world has just been beyond impressed, you know, what they're doing without extra manpower, you know, from allies like Germany and the United States. What do you think will happen to Ukraine and the citizens therein if Kyiv falls? I mean, are we going to see things like guerrilla resistance emerge? Do you ever foresee? You don't foresee basically the Ukrainian people bending to the will of Russia in the long term?
No, absolutely not. The Ukrainians have run a partisan army in the 40s that fought both Nazi Germany and the Red Army, and they're going to do it again. Keep in mind that we have a lot of veterans. The veterans have been able to purchase arms. The Ukrainian government has given out arms. Every region has formed what they're calling self-defense units. So, you know, if KU falls, and it could, I'm not saying that we, you know, if he unleashes the type of bombs, the thermobaric bombs that he has, which is the, we've seen the devastation that they've caused in the Middle East. It could be a horrible situation. You know, we're talking, you know, hundreds of, you know, the potential for hundreds of thousands of lives to be lost. But I think the Ukrainians will mount, you know, an insurrection. They will go underground. They will create partisan units. They are not going to just roll over, capitulate. Granted, there are going to be people that are going to say, you know, enough, I give. I don't want to die, and will basically, you know, call it a day and say, hey, let it happen. But I think, you know, true Ukrainian patriots will continue that fight. You know, and hopefully, you know, with the sanctions, with world, look, their economy is crashing. The ruble yesterday was valued at one American cent.
Yeah, it's less than that now.
It's less than so.
Yeah.
So, you know, how long are the Russians going to be able to sustain the fight if they're excluded from SWIFT? They can't collect their money. They can't trade goods. They're going to become so isolated that their whole country will collapse. And possibly that's when the Russian people will say, hey, enough. You know, we need to move on.
Right. And I think it is a very real possibility. I mean, one thing that causes a revolution are comfortable people that suddenly are not. Persistently. And so,
well, this morning we've heard, you know, some of the oligarchs have broken with him because they're seeing, look, they lead very comfortable lives. They have incredible apartments, luxury homes all over the world, in Italy, in Britain, you know, and that's being taken away. Roman Abramovich lost control of the Chelsea Football Club.
Right.
The British government said, no, you know, we're not going to allow you. So, the thing is, if their visas are going to be taken away, their property is going to be confiscated, they're going to lose the ability to travel to the West, you think that they're going to go back to Russia and say, yeah, you know, Vladimir, you know, keep it up. You know, they don't want to lose that status. They don't want to lose their property. They're too comfortable. They've gotten used to the West. What are they going to go back to Moscow and do what? Yeah. You know, when they won't be able to access, when they won't be able to access, you know, their luxury goods. And even Italy, who at first was resistant to putting in any sanctions because they claimed, well, you know, we're going to lose our luxury goods market to Russia. They finally said, well, enough. So, you know, no luxury cars, no designer clothes, et cetera. So, you know, the sanctions are working. And I think we'll see more and more of the oligarchs break rank with Putin.
Right. And I mean, and that seems to be the case. And as we were looking at this, I remember seeing a video of one of those Russian oligarchs actually breaking down and crying because Italy took away his villa. And that is something.
That was one of the reporters on RT. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he
could not believe that he lost his villa in Italy. Well, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
You know, people are losing their lives.
Right. Know? Exactly. And so I think it's just an interesting position that I think we're going to see Russia in, I think, in the next, you know, few months or so, as they recover from hopefully, you know, being ejected from Ukraine. You know, I'm not going to lie. I am not a fan, obviously, of war of any kind, especially aggression like this. But I mean, most people are not. And I think that's to the benefit of humans everywhere. So with that, thank you for your time. If people want to get in contact with the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America or your relief organization, how can they get a hold of you?
UCCAIllinois.org.
Okay, great. And Dan Dyson, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And good luck to Ukraine.
Thank you, Nick. We appreciate your support.
Thank you.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Hey, everybody. Nick Espinoza, your chief security fanatic here. And today I have an incredibly, incredibly important guest. It is around 2 p.m. Monday afternoon in Kyiv, Ukraine, and about 6 a.m. here Monday in Chicago Central Time on February 28th. And I just want to mention that for context here, because with me here is Inna Sovsun, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Thank you. She is a member of Ukraine's parliament. And I am not 100% sure where you are, but I believe you're in and around Kyiv. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Yes, yes. And we had some back and forth for the last couple of days, as you've obviously had to move due to the situation and all of that. And I want to start with that first things first. I mean, we're here in the United States getting mixed reports from the last 24 hours or so that there has been fighting that's still been going on. But this past night, we're also hearing reports that Kyiv was rather quiet, I think, in preparation for the talks that we'll talk about. So can you tell us the situation at the moment, how you and your people are holding up, and how is President Zelensky and his family as well? Are they still safe?
So I'll try to explain briefly how the situation looks like. So for your audience to understand is that Putin did attack Ukraine from three different directions at the same time. He did attack from the south, from Crimea, which he annexed from Ukraine in 2014. He did attack from the east, from the Russian border, trying to take over the cities of Sumy and Kharkiv. Kharkiv being the second biggest city in Ukraine, my native city, actually, I grew up there. It's just 40 kilometers from the border, and it's a 2 million people city. And then from the north, they are attacking from the Belarusian territory. So basically, they have taken over Belarus as of now, and they're trying to attack from them. The first night of the war, they started bombing Ukrainian military targets, initially with the goal of making sure that they destroy our aviation and our storages with weapons. But they failed to do so because Ukrainian counter-air defense systems did work. But they did hit several targets, but not as many as they expected. But the initial goal in terms of Kyiv, it was extremely important for them to take over Kyiv within the first 24 hours. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, they were planning to take over the airport, a smaller military airport, a bit north of the city, about 70 kilometers north from the city. And they tried to do that, but they failed to capture that airport. But the goal, the understanding was that they would capture that airport and then would land troops on the ground. There were about 17 military planes with soldiers on ready to fly to Ukraine. But because the fightings around that Hostomel airport were so intense for the first two nights, I'm really scared to see how that area looks like right now. But I know that there was intense battles over there for the 2 days at least. So the Russians were trying to take that airport, but they failed. And because of that, they couldn't move large numbers of soldiers like right away, right close to Kyiv. So after that, they started trying to encircle the city from different directions on tanks. Those brigades are just, they're like coming from all different sides. Like you never know when the new reports will appear, like here, they're here, they're there. It doesn't seem very well coordinated though. I'm not a military strategist though, but it seems to me slightly strange what they're doing is because they, like for instance, the first day of the war, one Russian tank entered the city of Kyiv from the north, from the area where I actually live. Normally, I'm at my friend's place right now, but I live in the north of the city. Mm-hmm. And one tank entering a 4 million city. So you can imagine that tank was sent on a suicidal mission. It was blown up like 30 minutes after that. And that was obvious, even for myself with no military experience. It was kind of clear that Ukrainians' armed forces and territorial defense would blow that tank up, which they did. So I'm just wondering, like, what was happening in the mind of the guys sitting in those tanks? Like, they're entering a city, a hostile city, in one tank without no support. They were just basically sent there to die, just like many other soldiers that are being sent here to Ukraine right now, because the number of casualties on the Russian side is enormous. It's over 5,000 in the first 5 days of war. So You can make some comparisons with other wars that Russia was taken part in, and the numbers there were so much. Those are the numbers that typically they would get in a few years of war. But that, those are the numbers that they have, the number of casualties in just 5 days of war against Ukraine. So as of now, the situation is, I wouldn't say stable. It is more quiet in the city right now. We do hear the air raid sirens now and then. We didn't hear major explosions. The major things happening in the city. And we did have the curfew imposed on 5 in the evening Saturday. Right. Up until 8 in the morning Monday. And so people were just staying where they are. Like I said, I'm staying at my friend's place right now because they have a private house. So in case of the air raid, we just go downstairs to the basement. So I don't have to go like many floors down if I stayed at my place. Mm-hmm. But for me, that also means I haven't been home for 5 days, right. Which is, again, like I really hate Putin for that.
Yeah.
So the biggest things happening in Kyiv now, and I'll just finish on that, are the groups of infiltrators that they sent to Kyiv for two reasons mainly. One is to set up the targets for their missiles, so they put in the targets, and then the army, the missiles launchers know better how to attack. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing the word incorrectly. I'm not a military expert, but I guess you know what I mean.
Yes.
And second of all, is they are just creating lots of tensions on the streets. Like they start randomly shooting at people, and you know, never know where that would come from. We had this terrific, terrible incident when they just started shooting at a car with a family in it, and there were mom, dad, and three kids, and one of the girls was killed, and two others are in the hospital right now. As of now, as of yesterday evening, 16 kids were killed and 300 Ukrainians overall. So the Ukrainian defense, territorial defense, the army and the police, the National Guard, they are working hard to make sure that the city is free from those infiltrators, but we don't know how many of them there are.
Right.
But lots of them are being killed here on the streets in Kyiv.
Right.
The situation is a bit worse in Kharkiv. Just 5 minutes before we started talking, I was just looking at video from Kharkiv, where they shooting what are called grads. You can check how that looks like. I'll make sure I get the English word correctly. It looks just terrible what I'm seeing, and it's extremely scary that they are using this. This is my native city. I feel so much pain for those right. people. So grads, I'm double checking the English wording. Multiple rocket launcher.
Yeah, grenades. Do you mean grenade?
No, so grads are multiple rocket launcher. So that's what it is.
Gotcha.
There are information is unclear from Kharkiv as of now, but they say that there are lots of civilian casualties as of now. And then on the south, the situation is tense, but more or less stable. They haven't managed to capture large territories, and they didn't capture a single big city in Ukraine as of now. We are fighting back. We're not giving up any cities to them.
Right.
Am I giving the sense of how the situation?
Absolutely. I mean, and it's just nobody wants to see war in their lifetime, and it's absolutely, you know, we're just watching in shock. I think the entire world is, and you know, on top of all of this too, I mean, what we've also been getting reports of are relentless cyber attacks as well against your infrastructure and all of that, trying to knock out communication systems, you know, all these kinds of things. And I'm just amazed that I'm able to, you know, sit here, you know, across the world and talk to you on the internet right now. How is the infrastructure, you know, across Ukraine holding up? Not just the internet, but just infrastructure in general. How are the supplies going on? Obviously, you've got internet right now. Is this stable? Has it been stable? Obviously, we lost communication for a while. We had reports that the internet was out, and I was just hoping it was that, and you were okay. And sure enough, you know, here we are. And now we're also getting reports that Elon Musk of Starlink says that he's unlocking all of his satellites to help you out. And is that helping, or is that not yet a thing? Are you waiting on equipment? Like, can you just give us an understanding of that as well?
So the infrastructure is working. There are troubles with connections in some areas, particularly the ones where the major battles are taking place. But it is more or less stable as of now. Regarding the cyber attacks, there have been many cyber attacks in the past couple of weeks leading to the war.
Right now,
another story that you probably should follow, given your background and your focus, is this. That the anonymous community have launched this major attack on Russian websites, and we are watching that like with great admiration and thank you. If anyone involved in that is listening to this, thank you on behalf of all the Ukrainians. This is extremely helping. So as of now, the cyber attacks on the Ukrainian websites, we don't see too many of those. So it is better than it used to be. But actually now we are fighting back in terms of cyber warfare to a very big extent. So this is getting a bit better, and so it's not as bad.
Yeah. And we've been getting reports of that, as well as intelligence communities, like the cyber warfare side of intelligence communities around the globe in support of launching cyber attacks against Russia, to the point where the Kremlin's website went down, multiple websites went down, Russian TV was hacked to play your national anthem. it's a good one. Right. It's a small moment of a smile when, you know, the aggressor, you know, takes it in the teeth like that, I think. But I think, if
any one of those people doing that, listening to that, playing Ukrainian national anthem is great. Kudos to that. But I think what is even more needed is just to put information on air on Russian television about the actual number of casualties of Russian soldiers here in Ukraine, because they are mothers and fathers. They need to know that their kids are being sent to die here. Right. And the only way to stop this is for them just to make sure that Putin is no more. And right. That is for them to decide whether they are scared or whether they want to save their kids. Right. So if anyone is listening, that would be great. Please do that. That would be, the Russian people are so much within the realm of this propaganda machine that it's just, it's just very scary. Right. So let's do that.
Yeah. And we're also getting reports that there have been mass arrests in Russia as Russian citizens have been taking to the streets in support of Ukraine, you know, over Vladimir Putin. And I think that's something that I don't think the Russian government was really expecting. And in that vein, one of the things that obviously our side of the world woke up to this morning is that it's been agreed upon that Ukraine and Russia are supposed to be meeting today. If it hasn't started already, I know it's 2 p.m. your time on the Belarusian border. Do you think any agreement with Russia can be trusted? Do you think it's safe for your diplomats to do this? Should they be doing it online? You know, what are your thoughts on that? What are President Zelensky's thoughts on that as well?
Before I proceed to that, I'm just like, again, I kind of want your audience to understand the general feeling here in Ukraine. And of course, everyone is extremely pissed at what is happening, including myself. But also everyone is just so organized, and everyone and this organization of resistance against Putin is so overwhelming. And you can see it on so many levels here, I've been telling it so many times. Like, my boyfriend is with the army, which I expected because he was in with the army before and he rejoined. Wow. My dad signed up for the volunteer territorial defense. Wow. My friends are joining the army territorial defense, or they volunteer, something like that. But then we're also seeing just random acts of courage on behalf of different Ukrainians. And there was this one case at the very first day of the war. when the Russian warship was trying to take over the island of Zmiiny, the Snake Island, around in the Black Sea. I don't know if you have seen the story, but it's just an amazing story. And I will just explain this before I proceed to what I was planning to say. Mm-hmm. So the Russian warship was trying to take over that island to use it as a base for further invasion into the south of Ukraine. And they were talking on the radio to the defenders of them, but to the people standing there, Ukrainian guards on that island. They said, like, we are Russian warship, we are here to take over the land, please surrender. And then the guards on the Ukrainian side said, like, Russian warship yourself. And that's basically the general attitude. And this phrase, like, Russian warship yourself, is just going viral everywhere. We are seeing like Georgian ships all over the world refusing to fuel Russian ships using this phrase, and everyone else. So right now, when some members, and I'm telling this story in reference to this talks, when someone asked some of the members of the delegation, like, what if Putin asks you to surrender? Then the answer was, well, he will go in the same direction as the Russian warship,
right?
Which is understandable. So the Russians want us to surrender. We will not. It's just impossible. There is not a single there is not a single person in the world who can make this whole, you know, resistance stop. So we are hopeful, but we don't believe a word Putin is saying. Every time he opens his mouth, he is lying. We do want the war to stop. But we are not surrendering. We are not giving our territory, which I think is understandable. Just imagine, well, in an, you know, surreal world, if Canada started bombing the United States cities and then suggested, right, like, let's meet on the border and decide, like, on the terms of the truce and how you surrender. That just makes no sense. Well, first of all, Canada wouldn't bomb the United States.
The Canadians are a little too polite for that.
Exactly. Yeah. They would say, like, oh, we are sorry. Yeah. But... That's about it. So we'll see how that goes. I'm really sorry now. I'm getting phone calls from other TV channels.
Yeah, no problem. Then in that sense, I'll skip all the other questions that I had.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.